Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Labor leaders speaking out on the D.C. riots and a new direction for workers, the Painters, and the PRO Act. And today on the show, Liz Shuler, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO and the New York State Labor Federation. Good afternoon and welcome to the Wednesday, January 13th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, in Google Podcasts. And when you get an opportunity, here's what you do. Just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a five-star rating. And we've got some five-star guests today. Liz Shuler, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, is going to be our first guest. We had her on the show a couple of months ago. And just a little background on her. She grew up in a union household in Oregon. Her father, Lance, was a power lineman, longtime member of IBEW Local 125 at Portland General Electric. Her late mother worked as an estimator in the company's service and design department. She worked her way up the ranks to international representative in the union's political legislative affairs department in Washington. And that's where she lobbied Congress on issues like energy, electricity, telecom, Davis-Bacon, healthcare, transportation, apprenticeship programs, pension reform, unemployment. I mean, she did it all. And today, as Secretary Treasurer of the Federation, she holds the second highest position in the labor movement. She also serves as Chief Financial Officer and oversees all those operations. And she's the first woman elected as the Federation's Secretary Treasurer, holding office since 2009. Good lady, hard worker. And I'll tell you, we have lots to talk about. We'll get into the coup attempt of a week ago, talk about the incoming administration, how she sees the future, and what's next for labor. Well, I'll tell you what's next for labor. Jobs. Back in 2009, Liz began working on an idea to use offshore wind as a template for how union labor is going to build the clean energy future. Here's what happened. She worked with leading renewable energy developers from Norway and Denmark. Then she worked with state labor feds up and down the east coast of the country. Checked in with elected leaders, get their point of view, talked to everyone she needed to figure out how to do what needed to be done with regard to creating union jobs. Well, the result was a partnership that has revolutionized standards in the offshore wind industry. Based on the model used by the Rhode Island Building and Construction Trades Council, the Danish Renewable Energy Group, known as Ørsted, and the North American Building Trades Unions are going to build multiple offshore wind projects. The development of 15 active commercial leases will lead to $25 billion in annual economic output and 83,000 jobs over a decade. It doesn't get any better than that. And she's going to talk about that. That took some work and brains and persistence. And Liz is going to talk about that on the show today. Her second guest is Mario Salento. Now, Mario is the president of the New York State AFL-CIO, which is a federation of 3,000 affiliated public sector, private sector, and building trades unions throughout the state. They represent 2.5 million members, along with retirees and their families, and they are the largest federation in the country. So how's that line up today? The number two person of the AFL-CIO and the number one person out of New York. Altogether, we're talking about almost 13 million union brothers and sisters representing the United States of America. Gotta love it. So those are two guests on the show today. Well, President Trump's effort to overturn the result of the presidential election and the violent attack on Congress a week ago by his supporters has created quite a dilemma for many, many companies. In fact, we addressed this yesterday on the show. We had a couple of large companies, Marriott, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Commerce Bank shares. They announced a suspension of donations to the members of Congress who voted against election certification. Well, yesterday, that list expanded to Amazon, AT&T, Comcast, Airbnb, MasterCard, Verizon, and Dow Chemical. Even Hallmark has asked for its money back from two of the senators who opposed certification, Josh Hawley and Roger Marshall. In the Senate, the temporary ban on donations will also affect Rick Scott of Florida, Ted Cruz of Texas, and a few other members. And in the House, the group includes more than half of the Republican caucus, including its two top leaders, Kevin McCarthy and Steve Scalise. This is pretty interesting. According to a board member at Morgan Stanley and Merck, we have to create some level of cost. Money is the key way. How many times have you heard that? Stop the money flow? Maybe they'll stop their craziness. Also, the National Association of Manufacturers, longtime a conservative group, was very, very harsh. It called out Republicans who cheered on Trump during his disgusting effort to overturn the election. That's what they called it, disgusting, which it said had inflamed violent anger. And the association added, this is sedition, and it should be treated as such. Now, some companies have not said anything, at least not yet. Among them, Goldman Sachs and Google, McDonald's, and the tobacco company Altria are among the 20 top donors to Kevin McCarthy. They have not announced a halt of donations to any members of Congress. But you know the pressure is on. Meanwhile, Deutsche Bank, Trump's bank, said yesterday they're not going to do business in the future with him or his companies in the wake of what happened. That bank is Trump's biggest lender with about $340 million in loans outstanding to the Trump Organization. The move, reported by the New York Times and citing a person familiar with the bank's thinking, comes as Signature Bank, where Trump's ethics disclosures show he has checking and money market accounts, called for him to step down. The resignation of the president, they said, is in the best interests of our nation and the American people. All right, let's talk about labor and what we need to do. And that is the PRO Act, the Protect the Right to Organize Act. It'll be one of the greatest labor law reforms of the generation, as it will make it easier and not harder for workers to form a union. Now, in a recent video, Jimmy Williams of the Painters and Allied Trades, he's a general vice president. He's been on the show a couple of times, and he explained to his fellow union members that the PRO Act has the chance to change and transform our union and transform the lives of millions of working class Americans. We have to stand up and fight. And he pointed out that the bill has the support of more than 200 reps, 40 senators, and Joe Biden. I want to take you to this video. This is posted on Facebook, and he calls attention to what's going to happen tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
We're nearly 100 years without any real labor law reform. It's time that we fight for the passage of the PRO Act. The PRO Act has a chance to change and transform our union and transform the lives of millions of working class Americans. We have to stand up and fight. The PRO Act has support of nearly 218 U.S. House of Representatives members, 41 United States senators. It also has the support of President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. That's why our union started the campaign Pass the PRO Act, and it has nearly 100 unions already signed up, 20 state feds, 7 million union members, But it's not enough. We have to reach in further and get more support. It's time for each and every one of them to stand up and fight for labor law reform. The stakes for us could not be higher. In this struggle, we cannot and will not lose. That's why we're starting and hosting our first of what could be many town halls to make sure that we bring this issue to light. Thursday, January 14th, 7 o'clock, we'll be hosting our first live stream event and national town hall. This will kickstart our broader and national campaign with speakers from across the labor movement. It's time once and for all that we find out where our politicians stand on this issue. The side of bosses or the side of the working class? The side of unions or the side of corporations? When the labor movement stands together, we can win. Let's go win this fight, brothers and sisters.
Amen. Jimmy Williams, Vice President of the Painters and Allied Trades. Again, that's tomorrow, a virtual town hall, 7 p.m. You can get more information at iupat.org, iupat.org. Well, as you know, Marty Walsh, the current mayor of Boston, has been selected to be the next labor secretary. We've got a comment here from Terry O'Sullivan, who is the general president of LIUNA, Labor's International Union of North America, and presenting sponsor of this show. Terry said, "We are awed and inspired that the top labor post in our great country will be occupied by one of our own LIUNA brothers. The choice of Mayor Walsh shows that when it comes to the agency responsible for enforcing our nation's labor laws, Joe Biden not only talks the talk, but he walks the walk." Walsh is only the seventh Secretary of Labor to come from the labor movement, and the first since the 1970s. I didn't realize that. God, he's got to be jumping up and down. All right, we're going to take a break and listen to America's Workforce. Liz Shuler, number two person in the AFL-CIO, coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. And that would be at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. They connect people with employment. We need them now. 216-666-2185. And you can find them online at ulagency.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show, Liz Shuler. Liz is the Secretary-Treasurer of the Labor Federation, which represents well over 12 million people in America. And we had her on the show a couple of months ago talking about women in the trades. And I'll tell you, Liz Shuler, that seems like it was light years ago that you and I talked. Boy, has everything changed. Welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us, Liz.
Thanks for having me back, Flash. And yes, clearly a lot has been happening, and particularly the events of the last week or so, which, as someone who lives in Washington, D.C., I never thought I would witness.
Yeah, you just were getting back in your offices because of what happened back in the spring. There was a lot of damage to the Labor Federation building, and now you're working remotely again. I'll tell you, Washington is not a safe place anymore, no matter how you look at it. But I'd like to get your thoughts. I mean, 1 week from now, we are going to have a new president, a union-friendly president. I can't wait to get to that moment. I mean, this is like this. This is torture. This is torture. Your perspective of what's going on. Let's talk politics. We have to talk politics because everybody is watching the events that are unraveling. This is a moment in history that we will never forget for generations and for centuries. Your point of view, Liz.
Absolutely. And as I said, as someone who lives right here in Washington, D.C., and in fact, I was a lobbyist for many years for my union, and I walked the halls of the Capitol. So I'm very, very familiar with, you know, what I was seeing unfold on television, you know, usually what it would take to get in the Capitol building. You can't even bring, you know, a bottle of water most of the time. But to see what happened, to see a mob overturn the results or try to of a free and fair election, and inspired by you know, our president who was inciting violence, was just absolutely heartbreaking and unbelievable. We witnessed, as you said, sort of what we would call what the greatest assault on our democracy since the Civil War, right? And it was years in the making. I mean, most of us weren't surprised. I mean, at the scale of it, we were, but it's been sort of, you know, a long time coming because Donald Trump has been consistently with his rhetoric and, you know, his conspiracy theories and lies. You know, he's been inciting this kind of violence for quite some time, and not to mention the Electoral College system. We fault quite a lot for creating an avenue for this kind of insurrection. And so it was shocking. It was heartbreaking. But we always say that our democracy is not a building, right? Our democracy is strong. It's withstood attacks over the course of time. And the labor movement really is the backbone of democracy. And so working people, you know, as we always do, rise to the occasion to make sure that our democracy is strong. And we did that by electing Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, and then with the recent victories in Georgia.
Yeah, the recent victories there, that was amazing. And I have to salute you and everybody in organized labor for what you did. I mean, you did a great job back in November. No doubt about that. And then you had to step it up even a few more notches to concentrate on Georgia. And I was reading day by day here on America's Workforce what labor was doing, the virtual meetings, the postcards, the calls. I mean, it was truly, truly amazing. But that's what it takes. That's what it takes to make sure that the workers have a seat at the table, and they will. You've got to be pretty excited moving forward here with the Senate changing. That was a tough one, but let's talk about the future here. And number one, in fact, I just played a clip from Jimmy Williams of the Painters and Allied Trades, and he was talking about the PRO Act, Protect the Right to Organize. Liz, how do you feel about that? I mean, we're 50-50 in the Senate. The tiebreaker would be Kamala Harris on that. You know, the Republicans don't like this. This is true labor law reform. What are you hearing right now, Liz?
Well, I think obviously the PRO Act is front and center, and we have launched what we call Workers First Agenda for 2021, because you're right, we do have an opportunity in front of us now with the Senate changing hands and worker-friendly majorities in both the House and the Senate, and now the White House. And you're You're absolutely right. We're thrilled. And I just wanted to say that the heroic efforts of our members during this election to turn out in record numbers, you know, not only with the general election, but the work that was done in Georgia was stunning. You mentioned the phone calls and the virtual pieces, but we also had an army of folks knocking doors safely with, you know, COVID protocols. They knocked over 1.5 million doors. And in a state like Georgia, that makes an incredible impact. So we will definitely say that working people are the ones that made that election happen. And in partnership with our allies and communities all across the state, we were making sure to get out the vote, right? That's what we do best.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So all of that to say, we're very excited about the possibilities for this next Congress, and worker empowerment is at the top of the agenda, you know, because we know that stronger unions are the name of the game, and we don't address any crisis in America without having workers' voices and more powerful ways for workers to engage in this process. And we believe that's through organizing a union. So the PRO Act is definitely a day one priority, as well as the Public Service Freedom to Negotiate Act for the public sector. And we believe that President Biden will be the most pro-worker president in history. And we also just heard the appointment to Labor Secretary Marty Walsh, who, as most of you know, is one of us. He carries mm-hmm. tools as a laborer in Boston. He led the building trades in Boston before becoming mayor. He was a state legislator. So he's got vast experience, and he wakes up every morning thinking about what workers need. So we're very excited about that. And certainly the pandemic, getting the pandemic under control is also an immediate focus, because if you can believe, workers on the front lines still don't have what they need. They don't have the personal protective equipment. We still don't have that OSHA temporary emergency standard to make sure that employers are mandated to respond to this virus and protect their workers. We also want to make sure that we get the Defense Production Act up and running to get the supply of personal protective equipment moving, and not to mention the paid sick days, the paid family leave, and child care that's needed for those who are both working on the front lines and who've lost their jobs.
You know, talking about Marty Walsh, I didn't realize this, that he is the seventh Secretary of Labor to come from the labor movement, only the seventh, and the first since the 1970s. The first since the 1970s. And you think about what
happened.
Yeah, to workers since the 70s. I mean, all the bad trade deals. You got Reagan coming in there, firing all the air traffic controllers. It's been an assault on labor ever since in the past 45, 50 years here. So it's very, very refreshing. Getting back to Georgia, Liz, I have to ask you, did the thought ever cross your mind that maybe the AFL-CIO should hire Stacey Abrams as an organizer?
We've learned a lot from Stacey, and she has been working at this for a very long time. I mean, right now, everyone knows the name Stacey Abrams. And
yeah.
I've known Stacey for many years, and before it was cool to know Stacey. She has been working in the trenches, and the folks in Georgia will tell you that she's been our champion from day one. We are big fans, and in fact, the last time I spoke to her, I was trying to recruit her to help us, you know, be a spokesperson for some of the campaigns that we're looking to launch in the next year. So she's a voice for working people, and she will always be there as our friend, but a friend to working families and communities, not only in Georgia, but across the country. She's quite an organizer.
Yeah, she's amazing. Totally amazing. What was it, like 800,000 people she registered in a very short amount of time, I might add. I mean, that was quite
the voter protection efforts that she did throughout the country.
Yeah.
In places where, you know, you saw the suppression efforts in various states, both through Fair Fight and Fair Count, she was out, you know, making sure that voters got re-registered and that they could cure their ballots. And,
yeah.
you know, so she was out on the front lines throughout you know, various states.
All right, Liz, I have to take a break. Liz Schuler, Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, AFLCIO.org for more information. Great website. Later in the show, Mario Salento will be joining us. Mario is president of the New York State Labor Federation. This is the AFL-CIO Day, no doubt about that. And you are listening to America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Wash your hands, avoid sick people, and touching your face. There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Visit cdc.gov/COVID-19. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, we are available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Liz Schuler, Liz, Secretary Treasurer of the Labor Federation, AFL-CIO. And 2 years ago, Liz had an idea, and that idea is turning into jobs. And I was reading a couple of times I had it at the top of the show, and we reported on this some weeks ago when the AFL-CIO released the information that you were involved in this offshore wind project that's going to create 83,000 jobs. Liz, take me from start to finish here. I know finish is still a little bit off, but this was an idea, and it was your idea. Why don't you explain this to our listeners? Go ahead.
Well, you probably know that the clean energy economy is growing by leaps and bounds in the U.S., particularly, you know, all up and down the East Coast. And offshore wind holds a lot of promise for the growth not only of our energy supply, but of good high-road, high-wage jobs. And most of the companies that are looking to develop are based in Europe. And they, our European counterparts, our union counterparts, have done an excellent job of working in partnership with these firms to make sure that these jobs that are growing, emerging industry are union jobs. And that has not necessarily been the case when companies leave Europe and come to the U.S., as we know. Once they land on our shores, they tend to fight unionization. They tend to try to maximize profits and hire U.S. managers that are union busters.
Right.
So what I was able to do is to leverage the relationships we have with our European union counterparts to broker meetings, discussions, partnerships with the companies in a top-down approach, so that we were going straight to the top and bypassing the union U.S. management at first, going straight to the parent company to say, you want to continue to, you know, make good on your promise to the unions you work with in your home country and abide by labor standards when you come to the U.S. And so by forging those partnerships and relationships overseas, we were able to get introductions to the U.S. management and work in concert, you know, with the building trades. And we're also looking at the supply chain, you know, of the components and parts being built in the U.S. in the future, as well as operations and maintenance. So it's a top-down approach to ensure that this emerging industry of offshore wind is a high road, high wage strategy that grows union jobs. Because as we know, the clean energy sector, that is not a given. So that's what we were able to do with Ørsted to begin with. And now we're looking to expand that footprint to the other firms that have market share, as well as to beyond offshore wind, right, to solar, to hydrogen, to other fuels that are a part of the clean energy economy.
It's interesting you point out that these companies that come from Europe, you know, heavily unionized, they come to the United States and they realize, boy, we can get away with just about anything here. And that's because of weak labor law in this country. And obviously, like we touched on in the first segment, the PRO Act would change all that.
That's right. As well as, not to mention, we have sort of a patchwork quilt state by state with different laws, different union density. So that was another part of the strategy, was to say, you're not going to get away with using one approach in Rhode Island and another approach in North Carolina or Virginia.
Right.
That we should be banding together as a labor movement with our state federations, our building trades councils, our industrial union councils, maritime, you know, the list goes on and on, because this is a multi-sector type of effort. So we were able to unify across states to put a template together for what we believe is the platinum standard type of agreement with these developers, and use it, you know, not to divide us, but to unite us.
I like that. So what's the timetable on this project? What do you see right now?
Well, the growth is going to be exponential. You mentioned the initial sort of projection of nearly 100,000 jobs. But, you know, as I said, that's one developer. And in the future, we want to expand the footprint across not just offshore wind, but in other parts of the clean energy economy. And we could see, just even in the next 10 years, tremendous growth in all states up and down the East Coast. So that was why it was so important to do more of a top-down strategy, so that we don't let these companies get away with treating workers differently in different parts of the country, not to mention the investment in training and workforce development that's going to need to happen, right? Where we have, you know, offshore wind technicians and classifications that are kind of throughout the supply chain of this industry that are going to need training and upskilling. And mm-hmm. so we were able to partner with the company on investment in that as well. And so in each state, they're kind of working with the players that want to tailor training, you know, to their particular areas. So in Long Island, I know there's a commitment to a wind energy training facility, and they're already working in concert with our local labor federation to make sure that, you know, it's consistent with our longstanding commitment in the union realm with our apprenticeship programs, because we've, you know, this isn't our first rodeo in terms of training, right? We've been training workers for over 100 years, and we know exactly what needs to what goes into making sure we have the most highly skilled, productive workforce on the planet. And that's no different with the offshore wind industry.
Liz, talk to me about getting all the parties together. As you know, I mean, this is a huge project. And to bring all the components together, that was not an easy thing. And I'm sure it took long hours, a lot of persistence. There were probably some days you probably said to yourself, why am I doing this?
Well, that's an interesting question. And you're right. You know, our labor movement is very diverse. We have a lot of, you know, each industry has its unique qualities. And obviously, working in a federation is a different animal than working within just one particular union. So you're right. It does take a lot of patience and perseverance, I guess I'll say, to keep your eye on the ball and kind of get through the various iterations of, you know, each union and their particular needs. And we do have these sectoral tables, which, you know, with the building trades and transportation trades, maritime trades, metal trades, professional employees, you know, the list goes on and on. So we We're able to work with our partners, as I mentioned, with the building trades, because construction is sort of the first phase of this industry when you're starting to put towers up in the water. But we do understand that there's opportunity across the supply chain. So when it comes to manufacturing, we want to make sure that those wind turbine blades are manufactured in the U.S. We want to make sure that the component parts that are going up in those towers are made in the U.S. We want to make sure that we have a Jones Act compliant ship that's built here in the United States that can transport those towers to the place where they'll be stood up in the water. We want to make sure that those facilities are maintained and operated by union labor. So there's a huge opportunity here across the entire industry that we're just getting started with, but we can see the potential, and only, though, if we are able to get the labor standards negotiated, the project labor agreements, making sure that all of that is done with union labor up front. So we're very excited about the potential.
Yeah, we've been on this issue about the Made in America. Scott Paul, I'm sure you know Scott from the Alliance for American Manufacturing. He's been real, real ademant because we lost so many jobs, millions of jobs to China. And a lot of this solar and wind production is coming from China. And we don't need that. We can do it here. We've got the skills. We've got the workforce. We've got training facilities. It can be done, and it needs to be done here. And it's good to have a president here that understands that. So I'm looking for better times ahead.
Yes. The commitment from the top now with Joe Biden and his energy policy to signal that we're no longer going to just allow this industry to ignore, including labor standards, in that commitment, so that we have a chance at getting, our union contractors a fair playing field to bid the work and to make sure that, union labor isn't the lever that companies are using to be competitive with, right?
Yeah. Union strong. All right. We're going to leave it on that note. Always positive way to leave the show with you, Liz Schuler, Secretary Treasurer of the Labor Federation, AFL-CIO.org. Let's talk in a couple of months, and let's stay on this project, and hopefully we can point out a lot of good things, not just a few, that Joe Biden's going to do for workers, okay?
Workers first agenda. Let's go.
Okay. Take care, Liz. Be safe in Washington, okay?
Appreciate you. Thank you, Flash. You too.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Mario Salento is president of the New York State Labor Federation. He's up next right here on America's Workforce. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers. Standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Like I said, this is AFL-CIO Day. We just got off the phone with Liz Schuler, Secretary Treasurer of the Labor Federation. Now we're going to New York. And joining us is Mario Salento. Mario is president of the New York State AFL-CIO, which is affiliated with 3,000 public sector, private sector, and building trades unions, and they represent 2.5 million members, retirees, and their families, and they're the largest federation in the country. Mr. Salento, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, I tell you, thanks for having me today. I really do appreciate it. It's great to be with you.
I love that New York accent. I don't like the Yankees, but I like the accents.
From the Bronx, yeah. You can tell them from the Bronx, yeah.
No doubt. No doubt about that. So what is it, 9 years that you're head of the Federation? Talk to me a little bit more about your background.
Yeah, well, you know, I was born and raised in the Bronx. I've worked at the state AFL. Next month will be 29 years. I started at 23. And you recognize it's more than half your life. That's scary in and of itself. But I started out as the communications director. I'm a CWA member, Communications uh-huh. Workers of America, have been for 30 years. Started out as a communications director, served as chief of staff for about 10 years, and then been president now for the last 9. And, you know, the communications aspect of it really gives you a good understanding of everything that the Federation works for, because you're involved with the politics and the legislation and the grassroots. So it was a great way to really begin my career. And then as chief of staff, again, you work with all of the different departments and all the different affiliates throughout the state, and that led to this position. And I was very fortunate to have the role that I have.
You know, in today's world, communication is key, and it's good that you have that communication background. And speaking of that, talk to me about what you've done with the technology to communicate with your workers. I know you got this Union Strong app. Explain that. I think that's a pretty good idea. Go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, you recognize that the ways that you have to communicate with people and with members in particular has to always evolve. And, you know, when I first started here, we had a public access television show that was in 1993 or so. And you had a public access radio, a television show. Then we had a weekly radio show. And you get to this point in time and you recognize those are still fine methods of getting a message out. But if you're really going to speak to people the way that they are getting their information, you have to change with the times. And the app has been tremendously successful because it allows us to go directly into someone's pocket, right? You take out your phone, your app is there. You take it with you to work or to on vacation, or you take it wherever you take it, and you can get information instantly. And what you can do is talk to your members, talk to them about what's important, what affects their lives, and what the real purpose is to get them active. First, you have to educate people. You have to talk to them, and then they'll make the decision for themselves whether or not they want to be active on a political campaign or a legislative campaign or attend a rally or to support their brothers and sisters at a picket line. Right. These are the things that are available to them. You make it as easy for them as possible to access the information, and then they'll make their own choices. And you know, with 2.5 million members in this state, you really have to always be innovative in how you contact them and how you speak with them, because we have a great sense of power here with those 2.5 million members if we're all on the same page. And
right.
How do you get people on the same page? You educate them and you talk to them. And once they understand the issues, you'd be surprised at how much activity you can stir up.
Did you get a lot of buy-in when you launched that app, Union Strong?
We did. We had several thousand in the first week or two, and you know, it's we go through all of our different affiliates. You laid out at the beginning of this discussion, we have 3,000 local unions in the state, right? And that's how we get to the 2.5 million members. So we had buy-in from not only our unions, but their activists as well. And now we see other states looking to do the same thing. And that happens a lot. You know, we're the largest state labor federation in the country. A lot of times what we do here sort of sets a path or a tone for the rest of the country. And we feel that responsibility. And the communications aspect of what we do is a big part of that.
Well, I'll tell you, New York is union strong. I saw the latest union density numbers, and you're at about 21%. I think Hawaii is the only one that beats you at 23%. But you're doing all the right things in New York. There's no doubt about that. Talk to me about the legislative agenda. I see your governor on TV a lot. He seems to be trying to get ahead of this pandemic situation. How's relations with the state government there?
The relationship is strong. I have to say, we talk on a regular basis. He understands what the labor movement and the role we play is. He understands that we're pretty much sort of the fabric of the society, at least in New York, with our history and our density and what we bring to the table every single day. So the relationship is strong, and we work together. And we've been able to do a lot of good things together, whether it was a $15 minimum wage or paid family leave, or last year we secured historic farm worker legislation. So we've been able to do a lot of things together. And we look forward to this year, and there are a couple of things that we have to get done, we feel, simply because of the times that we're in. You know, we recently worked on getting passed legislation that would help to protect public employees regarding the pandemic and everything that comes around with that in terms of safety and health protocols. Right now, there are no statutory protocols for private sector workers in this state in terms of how to respond to infectious diseases. Now, keep in mind, before COVID, we had to deal with Ebola and the avian flu and SARS. And so our priority going into this legislative session, which began only on 2 days ago, the priority is to put into place protections for working men and women who, even now, 10 months into the pandemic, have no statutory protocols to protect them. What we're trying to do here is we want to establish minimum standards for COVID-related workplace protocols for any future communicable disease events, right? So it would establish protocols on the use of PPE and staffing policies and social distancing practices, cleaning and disinfecting, anything that would increase safety and decrease exposure. And it would create enforcement mechanisms, establish workplace committees, because you want to get input from everyone. Everyone should have a voice on this. And the reality is it's about the safety of the workers, obviously, first and foremost. But keep in mind, it's for their employers also, because they spend a lot of time on the workplace floor. And it's for the customers that come into contact with them every day. So, you know, we have 19 million people in this state, and shame on us if we haven't learned anything from these last 10 months. What we want to do is we want to have a template here to make sure that, you know, we can save countless lives moving forward. Because, look, COVID is the worst of everything that I just mentioned. But, you know, unfortunately, there's probably going to be other things down the road, and we have to be prepared for it. We want to set that tone.
Mario, would you say that the problem that you're encountering, and you're not alone, I'm hearing it from a number of state federations, is a lack of leadership on the federal level? Because it seems like this administration, which only has a week left, has said, well, hey, the state's got to figure it out. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, that's the thing. You know, we've received no guidance from the federal government. We've received no assistance. And it's a shame. And I think that's part of the reason why we're getting ready now to elect Joe Biden come into office in another week or so. There's been nothing. And in fact, in a lot of ways, they've made our lives more difficult. So it's incumbent, and it's been incumbent upon all of the state labor federations across the country to work with their state governments to implement plans like this, and not only for the short term, but for the long term. We recognize that policies now are must be handled on a statewide level. I'm hopeful, and I'm sure things will change under a President Biden. But he's left us, President Trump has left us no choice but to sort of fend for ourselves here.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a little bit concerned about the possibility of layoffs in a number of states. I see recently your governor announced the advance of $1.5 billion to preserve vital services threatened by the cash flow issues and to right. prevent any kind of cuts. What do you see on the horizon? I mean, are they going to raise taxes? I've heard a couple of those scenarios panning out. What's the game plan?
No, that's a good question. Yeah, what the governor was able to do that, and we were able to temporarily hold off on any layoffs. The way we're approaching this legislative session and this state budget, which is for us due on April 1st, is we're saying take a comprehensive view of this problem. You know, we're looking at possibly here a $15 billion deficit for this year, right? A $15 billion deficit. So what we're saying is you can't possibly cut your way out of that. You know, we have to look at all revenue-generating options, and not only just only tax options, but if we don't raise a significant amount of revenue, we're going to dig ourselves in an even deeper hole economically and socially. First, economically, you'll see even greater job loss, right, because we won't have the funding to maintain the services and then the jobs that go along with providing those services. So what happens is you lose even more income tax revenue. Now you have more people on unemployment, meaning they can only purchase, at best, the essential. Then you have the residual effect of hurting small businesses across the state because they have fewer customers. And as a result, you lose tax revenue from those businesses. And then the small businesses shut down, they lay off their workers, and you exacerbate the situation even more, and the cycle starts all over again. The social impact, then, of losing, you know, education, funding, health care, transportation, sanitation, law enforcement, firefighters, the standard of living and the quality of life then suffers immeasurably. That's why we're saying, first and foremost, we do believe that wealthy individuals in New York have to pay their fair share. We support different tax brackets for billionaires, ultra-millionaires, and we define that as those New Yorkers making $5 million, $10 million, $100 million, and $1 billion. Combined, those proposals themselves can raise up to around $10 billion in state revenue. But we're also looking at other things. We're looking at, and the governor has been supportive of this, legalizing and regulating the adult use cannabis program. The estimates are that raises as much as $300 million in new tax revenue. And really what I think is more important here in terms of getting our economy back on track after we get through the pandemic is that it has the possibility of creating 30,000 new jobs. Now, those jobs should be unionized, and they should be family-sustaining jobs. And that takes us through, you know, well into the future. We're looking at legalizing gaming as well. The governor has been on board with that, the revenue that generates. And we're looking at eliminating the rebate on the stock transfer tax here in New York. That's been rebated for decades, and that could generate $13 billion a year. So the reality is this. We have to take a real comprehensive approach to how we do this, because the economic and social harm of letting any of those cuts occur would be devastating to the state. It would be devastating to people who've been suffering long enough as it is throughout this pandemic, and then exacerbating that with long-term job loss.
Well put, my man. There's a lot of things that we have to discuss, and we have to do them immediately. Mario, I'm just about out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Mario Salento, president of the New York State Labor Federation. The website is nyafl-cio.org. The Twitter handle is at nysafl-cio. You keep up the fight, my brother, and let's keep in touch on these issues, all right?
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me today. I really do appreciate it.
Okay. And Mario, make sure you send this out, tweet it out to all the members in the New York State AFL-CIO. Listen to America's Workforce, okay?
Will do. We'll send it out to 2.5 million strong.
There you go. Thank you so much. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the UAW, Chris LaGrange of UConn Blog, and the Teamsters. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.